great workshop that they have put together. And let me just say that it's not such an accomplishment to get me to do to give four lectures. Just keep it a secret. But I have a reputation to keep, so. No, I'm delighted to be here. It's really a wonderful place and a wonderful occasion to meet. So I'm going to talk here about propagation of France in excitable media, and I intend to give a series, a sort of organized series of lectures on this topic. And maybe this is the occasion to gather some material in a unified way. So this is at least the goal. One of the goals I'm setting to myself is to try to give you an overview in an organized way. So as usual, I was asked to give a mini course, which would be also part of which would be introductory. And so I'm going to do this introduction at least today. But as usual, I notice that there are many specialists here in this room. So in advance, I apologize to them for saying things today that many of you know very well. And but maybe this sort of way things are going to be organized, which could be interesting. So, so this is the title, general title of the talk, and I don't know if you can see, maybe. So, really, this series of talks is devoted to properties of one equation. Really, the main thrust of what I'm going to discuss is one very important partial differential equation, which is the semilinear heat equation, or the what is called here the reaction diffusion equation. So, this is for one single equation for a scalar equation or scalar unknown u. It depends on t and x. And in the first equation, you have the variations of u are governed by two phenomena, basically. And this is a balanced equation for two phenomena. One would say that there is a tendency to disperse. So this is really given by the term minus Laplace of u. And one which is which reflects the fact that the medium in which this happens is nonlinear, and in fact its properties change along with the level that u has reached. And this is really what is a reaction, known as a reaction term, f of u, and this reflects that the medium is excitable. The Laplace term and so on, I will not come back on it. The laws that govern this diffusion are well known. There are some classical models to either deterministic or probabilistic. In fact, I will not really talk about the probabilistic aspect of this equation, but all of this is really this completely translation of a lot of things into probabilistic language, as a matter of fact. So those things are very closely related to probabilistic interpretations of this equation. And the more general equation I want to discuss in this series of talks is an equation which takes place in heterogeneous media. And so generalization of this, and I need to, in fact, let me get some. Do you you have maybe a pencil to write on the transparency? Where? Underneath? Ah, okay. Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. And so, so this more general equation, and there is a term here missing. This more general equation is, so there is again a diffusion term here with a matrix A of X. And there is in addition a transport term, which is given by Q of X dot grad U. And this is equal to, again, a reaction term F of X and U, which can depend on X as well. And I'm going to discuss propagation phenomena later on. I will not talk about this today, maybe in the third lecture. I'm going to discuss propagation phenomena for this equation, which take place in a periodic medium, so when all those things are periodic. But let's just keep in mind that this is, let's say, a more general equation when diffusion properties and transport properties or reaction properties can vary along within the media. So this is a heterogeneous equation. So as I said, the main thrust of my lecture here is to discuss propagation of fronts. And let me just say one word about propagation of fronts. So traveling fronts indeed are, first of all, a solution which connect one state to another state. And in some sense, they are one of the most organized way to represent a phase transition phenomena. This is somehow what's going on, a phase transition phenomena when you, between two states. You have two states. Here, for simplicity, I've taken 0 and 1. And I will mostly deal with those cases, actually 0 and 1. But let's keep in mind that, for instance, in this equation, one can also look for stationary states which would not be constant states. And in some cases, one has to do that, as a matter of fact. And so this is a front and a traveling front, so we represented it in this manner, in one-dimensional setting. And let me just make the opposition with traveling pulse, which is another important object. And in the traveling pulse, for instance, you come back to the same stationary state as before. For instance, nervous flux is more traveling pulse. It looks like more like a traveling pulse, of course, than a traveling front. After the signal is passed, the state is back to its original state. So, let me just say that, and I will come back to that in a moment, let me just say that this type of reaction, diffusion, or advection, or transport equation have appeared in many contexts, and I'm going to slightly describe at least one of them and a little bit hint at the second one. So in particular in combustion phenomena, and they also arise in other chemical systems. They were used to describe various phase transition phenomena, but also they were used a lot in biology and ecology. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. There are also now there are several models in social sciences which try to use this type of models to describe, for instance, the way populations in demographical studies, the way populations change. But there are many other situations. So let me start now with I want to tell you a little bit about modeling. So let me start with describing you at least some experiments. And I want to also would like to describe to you what is the basic physical mechanism behind propagation of fronts through reaction and diffusion. So the first simplest experiment is one which concerns combustion. So you have a cylinder here which contains a mixture, a reacting mixture. And suppose that so this mixture has the right composition. Okay. It's okay. Is anyone smoking here? So and so it's suppose that it contains it contains a reacting mixture. Suppose you have to put some heat at a given point. So let's say that you change the temperature distribution from being constant to this temperature distribution, which I have written here. So if you let the system evolve, what you see in the right conditions, you see that the temperature distribution, in case the things are there is no heat, there are no heat losses in particular, or important heat losses, what you would see is a temperature distribution which looks like that as time evolves. And so this is one of the most classical examples of an experiment which you can do, which shows the existence of those fronts. So this is a front. So in fact, in this case, what you have two fronts moving away one from the other, and they have both the same speed. The speed is a very important matter. They're both of the same speed, and they have a very precise form, which is preserved as these things move away. So this is basically one of the things that illustrate this phenomenon. This was, I believe that this was discovered at the end of the 19th century. It's really surprising that why such a basic phenomenon in nature took so long a time to be understood, the fact that there is this very precise shape and speed associated with this slow combustion process, which is known as a deflagration. But it was discovered in particular in France by Mallard and Le Chatelier, and there were some other studies at the same time. But those were two engineers in France which had been commissioned by the government to investigate fires in mines. And so they carried experiments and understood those things. Let me just tell you one while I'm at it. I think there's a very precise explanation, physical explanation, which explains why there is this mechanism of propagation of front with reaction and advection. And it can be described in a very heuristic way, in a very simplified way, in the following manner. So what you do when you start heating a portion of the gas, so let's say that the gas is divided into slices. Okay, there are several slices like that. So when you start, you bring heat at the slice one. So this slice reaches a temperature at which reaction occurs. Reaction is very strongly temperature dependent. And so this is the reaction part. And after this reaction takes place, then if this reaction is exothermic, which is what you need to have something like that happening, it produces heat. And this heat diffuses in the nearby slice 2, those two slices which are adjacent to it. And if the reaction is exothermic enough, in some sense, this will bring the neighboring slices again to the temperature at which this reaction occurs. So again, now, at this point, in slices 2, the reaction occurs, and again, this exothermic thing happens, and it gives, it raises the temperature at slices 3 and so forth and so on. Okay, so this is a basic mechanism which explains why a reaction and diffusion system can produce a front. Now, of course, to understand like the speed at which those things happen, you have to go to a modeling which is which is continuous, and this will be one of the tasks here we will have to explain. So this is the basic phenomenon of reaction diffusion. I'm not going to talk about pulse, but I have one favorite example of a traveling pulse, an experimental situation of a traveling pulse, which I cannot resist of showing to you. So this is an example of traveling pulse in an excitable medium. So the the representation here is it's not an unforgettable artistic piece, let me say, but I've never been very good at drawing. So this is a stadium, a football stadium, and this is called, it has various names, right, this phenomenon that people raise at a given point, and this sort of goes around, and this is called, in French, it's called la ola, which comes from Spanish, I guess, right? And I think here it's known that in the U.S. it's called, here it's called as a wave, the wave in England also. In the U.S. it's called the Mexican wave for some reason, because it may have started at the Mexico World Cup. It's very interesting, by the way. This is a real traveling pulse, because it really goes with a definite speed. It's, by the way, a heterogeneous media, but I'll come back to that in a second. It's not so clear, but I'll come back why it's heterogeneous. But it's really a wave, and one of my dreams is to have to really do an to cook up a model which would really fit with the experimental observations. So I think one can think of something, one can sort of fathom some model for that. But anyways, my friend Jean-Michel Lasserie, who is not a soccer lover, but who was forced for some reason or other to be in some stadiums, told me that he witnessed a case like that where he saw two waves going from opposite directions, crossing each other, like solitons. He really saw, he told me he has an experimental observations of solitons. But what I did not represent, this is the heterogeneous part here, what I did not represent here in this picture is that somewhere here, usually it's really at the middle of those things, more or less really at the middle of this field, you have the official tribunes, where people are invited, and usually important people are invited, and are not so fanatic about those things. And Jean-Michel Lasserie again told me that he has seen many times this wave die at this point. So this is a first illustration why heterogeneous media sometimes in adverse situations can stop a propagation of a pulse or front. And in fact, the observations are models to that. Maybe if I have time at the very end, I'll come back. Not in this case, unfortunately, which I'd love to explain, but in other case. Okay, so this is the situation. So let me tell you a little bit of. So I'm continuing this introduction, but let me tell you a little bit about a model. You know, how one can come up with a model from combustion. I'm going to take a very simplified model just to give an idea of where those things come from and what they represent. So I'm going to have this in the back of my mind in the other talks as well, let me just describe very rapidly one case, which is the case of flames. So if you want to have one equation, I'm going to describe you several simplifications which lead to that, and it's always good to have in mind how this model is produced. So if you want to come up with one equation, first of all, usually consider a very simplified mechanism, which is this here, where the complicated chemistry which takes place in a flame is usually simplified to one dominating equation. And there's only one important factor here, which is F. Of course, you know, chemical reactions like that do not occur, as it would violate any principle you know. But this is somehow a summary of a dominating equation, and there is only one product, let's say the fuel, F, which is which the concentration of which is it is the explaining factor here. So let's call Y its mass fraction of this, and T the temperature, and those are the important the two unknown variables which come into play in this model, and from with Y and T given, you can define the reaction rate, the kinetic rate at which the reaction advances. And the most classical kinetics, which is usually retained, are Arrhenius kinetics, in which this kinetic rate, little omega, has two factors in it. One is given by the law of mass action. It's proportional to y. So that's usually known as the law of mass action. It could be y to the n, wouldn't change much. And a factor which is the Arrhenius law, which is a temperature dependence in this kinetics, is g of t. And usually what one does is one cuts off, one truncates the temperature below a certain threshold. And there are reasons for doing this, but I will not discuss maybe why one does that. This has been done from the beginning of this model. I will tell you in a minute when these type of models were first written. So we'll always assume that this this reaction term, the dependence on temperature, is such that it's zero. It's identically zero below an ignition temperature. You assume that the temperature, that the reaction needs to have achieved, needs to a temperature which has achieved a threshold value theta, which ignites the reaction. Okay, so this is a model with ignition temperature or truncation, and it's strictly positive afterwards. This is a note. So here's an example of a system you can write. I'm not going to detail how one reduces, there are a certain number of simplifications in this combustion, in this model. There are many simplifications from the primary equations to arrive to this thing. But here is one model, one of the important models, in which the main simplification is that you decouple the hydrodynamics and the reaction itself. So you assume that there is an underlying flow, which is a priori given, Q of X. And, for instance, here I'm going to write it down in some cylinder sigma, but this is more general than that. And once you have done this simplification, then basically you are led to the following system of two equations for the two variables, T, temperature, and Y, the concentration. And this is this equation. So the first, and this is a so-called thermodiffusive model, okay, temperature and diffusion. And so the first equation is, again, a nonlinear, those two are nonlinear heat equations. So dt by dt minus Laplace t plus this transport term with this exogenously given Q of X is equal to this kinetic rate G of t times Y. And the second equation here is almost the same as before, except that there is a minus sign here in front of the kinetic rate. And also, the diffusion coefficient here is not the same as above. This has been done through a certain reduction of the variables, a dimensionalization procedures for the variables. But there is one parameter which remains there, and this parameter is called 1 over the Lewis number. And this is an important physical number, the Lewis number. I will show you in a minute with the results why it plays a role. It really, its value really will affect the type of phenomena that takes place. But basically, what you can think of the Lewis number is some kind of ratio of heat conductivity over molecular diffusivity. So in some sense, it tells you if you are very close to a case when the molecular diffusivity is very small, for instance, solid. So if you take a solid propellant, would be the case when you let this molecular diffusivity go to zero, or other cases. In practice, it's close to one, I should say. In many instances, it's very close to one. And for instance, if you want to look at a flame, then you want to look at front, so such that T would go from 0 to 1 as you move from minus infinity along the cylinder from minus infinity to plus infinity. So this tells you that the mixture is fresh on the left, I should say on this side, and it's burned, completely burned on the right, and it moves from right to left. So the burned gases move towards the fresh mixture, and the reaction consumes it. And so this is why you have also the inverse conditions for Y. The fuel is at its maximum concentration at minus infinity, and it's completely absolutely consumed at zero. This, by the way, is not always true for more complicated reactions, but I will not go into this. The reason why you have a plus sign, minus sign is good to have in mind. It's because this reaction is exothermic, so its kinetic rate produces heat, increases temperature, but consumes Y. So it's a good way to remember why. What are the signs? And for instance, I've written here adiabatic laws, and I have written here adiabatic law. So dy nu is zero. This no, the flow doesn't go through the wall. But also this one tells you that dt by d nu is zero. There are no heat losses. By the way, I should mention, as you will see, I will mention many open problems. And even for this equation, there are many open problems I'm going to show you. But even in more simple versions of this, which I will talk about later, when there are heat losses, the problem is very much open. There are many interesting mathematical problems there, which are important. So let me give you one example, one important example which I will discuss in more details in a minute. So it's a case of uniform fields. So when the field is uniform, so you might as well take constant. You might as well take zero, it to be zero. And either you are in the cylinder and it's along, alpha naught is in the direction of the cylinder, or you are in space. In any case, in this case, you can look for one-dimensional solutions of these equations here. If Q is zero or Q is just a constant, you can look for one-dimensional solutions. And then you see that the systems, and you look for traveling front solutions. So I've not explained what this is here. So you look for solutions of the form. You look for particular solutions which are given by T of T, X and Y, as given as T of X1 plus CT, really. And likewise for Y. So then, this equation, the term dt by the time derivatives is just given by ct prime, and you are led to the following system, which is one of the simplest systems you can come up with in combustion. It's minus t double prime plus ct prime is equal to g of ty minus 1 over Lewis y double prime plus cy prime is equal to minus g of ty, and with those boundary conditions, which are t goes from 0 to 1 and y goes from 1 to 0. By the way, in all these problems, as you will see, keep in mind that C is an unknown most of the time, right? If you want to explain what is the speed at which propagation takes place, that's part of the things that you want your model to be able to tell you. So C is an unknown, and you want to determine C, T, and Y. This has been completely solved, and I'll come back to this system later on. But you see, let me just give you, and let me anticipate on something I'm going to tell you later on. If you, even as soon as you take something non-constant, but if suppose you take a flow which is called a shear flow or a parallel flow, so Q has the same direction all over. And in this setting, it depends only on the y variables, transverse variables. Then again, you have traveling fronts, and those will represent your flames. And so, which are given in the form t of x1 plus ct, y, and y is equal to y of x1 plus ct, y. But now you cannot, the number of variables here is not decreased to 1, so you have things which generally depend on the transverse variable y. And if you do the same thing, then what you obtain is a system of partial differential equations. It's a system of partial differential equations where you want to determine C, you should think of C as a that's the way physicists call it, a nonlinear eigenvalue in this problem. You want to determine C as a nonlinear eigenvalue coming in with those boundary and limiting conditions. I will tell you results about that, but I should say that by and large, except for one result, this is not solved at the moment, this system. So the 1D equation, 1D system is solved. I will show you a system when this reduces to one equation, which is which is completely understood. But in general, this system at the moment is not understood, and I will maybe tell you later why. But let me just give you also to motivate. Again, I'm giving this sort of. To motivate some things I'm going to tell you. So there's one case in which this reduces to a single equation. It's a so-called equidiffusive flames, in which this Lewis number was 1. So when the Lewis number is 1, here, for instance, in the elliptic version, or it is likewise, so in the elliptic version, let me start from there. Then if you add up those two equations, you see that t plus y is constant, and therefore that it's 1. So therefore, y, you can reduce the number of unknowns, you can replace y by 1 minus t, and your system reduces to one equation. So minus Laplace of t plus c plus alpha of y dt by dx1 is equal to f of t, and the Neumann condition on the boundary of the cylinder, and again the same boundary conditions, t moves from 0 to 1. If you look at the more general equation, you would have, I save this for further reference, you will have an equation, again a single equation, where you just have the equation in t, and your reaction term g of t is just f of t times 1 minus t. So just keep in mind that this is how you get single equation here. So it's really, as you see, a number of simplifications, but the hope is, there are many simplifications. I did not stress this at the beginning, but this in particular, the fact that q is something that you take as given, is really a drastic simplification. In many situations, as you well know, the presence of a temperature changes creates very much a gradient in the flow. And but here, the point of view here is to take it as given and to examine maybe how its shape, etc., will influence the propagation properties. And this is one of the things I will talk about later on. So this is how you get a model like that from combustion. So I ask you to keep this in mind. Let me give you another, just to very briefly mention two other cases of modeling. In fact, the other case where there are many, many cases, as I said, where this equation appears, but historically one of the first cases which was where this model was introduced was in genetics of populations. And basically you consider a situation, you have two alleles, little a and capital A, and therefore you have three classes of genotypes, homozygotes and heterozygotes ones. And in case you assume that the diffusion rate is 1, that there is random mating between the individuals in these populations, that you have different rates of each of these genotypes, death rates of these genotypes, to 1, to 2, to 3, then basically you can show, and some justification of that was done by Aronson and Weinberger, you can show that V is like U of T and X, where U satisfies this equation, and F of U is a product of three terms, U times 1 minus U, and this term U. Basically, this was the equation introduced by Fisher. This is Fisher equation. And, well, Fisher equation is one particular case here. And depending on the various parameters here, you can have different shapes of different shapes. For instance, one shape, one important shape is when this is a constant, for instance. So since here this disappears and you have a constant, it's an important case, and this is really Fisher's equation. But you have also cubic, the so-called bistable case, and other cases which come out from there. Another case, another important case where, again, modeling, where this type of forms appears is in ecology. And this is a very important model in ecology when you take U of T and X to represent the density of some population in a habitat. And the diffusion of this population may depend on the patch on which it finds itself. So there are cases when it diffuses very easily. In other cases, in mountains, for instance, where it diffuses less. And again, it can be in favorable or unfavorable environments. This is some kind of threshold limit, which is given, for instance, by the food which is available in this habitat. Or, for instance, if you are in an unfavorable environment, there are many predators, for instance, in a region, this could become negative and so on. Or more general, higher dimensional versions would be something like that. And this is a very important model in ecology, and it was introduced in this heterogeneous environment in particular by Shikezada in Japan, and Shikezada, Kawasaki Shikezada and her co-workers, mainly Kawasaki. And maybe towards the very end of my talk, if I have time, I would like to discuss a little bit some aspect of the heterogeneous environment there. So, as you see, there is a number, I just mentioned all those things, because there is a number of situations where this happens, this equation. It's really, really amazing to see in how many different settings this happens. So, let me just tell you a little bit the origins of these models, so historically, and in fact, it's by talking with Mayan Mimura, Professor Mimura, who's here from Hiroshima, who's a great expert on these questions, who, after which I really got a clearer picture of the historical aspect of those things. So apparently, and I learned this from Mayan Mimura, the first instance was by a certain Mackendon. Am I right, Mayan? By a certain Mackendon in... who back in the 37 was studying epidemiology. So again, another instance. He was studying the spreading of plague in India, I believe, and he had the first model like that. By the way, there are studies, I mentioned social science, there are studies which really try to understand how the plague, for instance, spread throughout Europe in the Middle Ages. And there are models where they compare data with historical data, and really rather convincing, I should say. Anyway, so what I'm very struck by is that you have those three works here, which are really the same year, basically 37, just before the war. You have those three works in two very different settings. You have first Fisher, who introduced this for population genetics, a little bit in the way I caricatured it a few minutes ago. And so giving rise to this equation with an F of U is U times Y minus U, so it's called the Fisher equation for population genetics. He conjectured that you would have a speed of propagation, and it was later proved, and it was proved immediately afterwards by Kolmogorov, Petrovsky, and Piskunov, who take up this model. And this, in my mind, is really one of the very important papers on nonlinear PDEs in the last century. It's a very important paper because it really sets a base for understanding what's going on in the nonlinear parabolic equation. At about the same time, Zeldovich, and the great Zeldovich and Frank Kamenetsky came up with a model very close to the previous one, but with another nonlinearity, and they were motivated by flame propagation. I should say that later on, nonlinear heat equations like and systems of the type I had written before were used again in two further different settings. One by the famous work of Hodgkin and Huxley in 52 about propagation of nerve influx, and Turing in 52 again. He was interested in the division of cells. So he had a great insight again into this equation. The Alan Turing, it's the one from logics and computer science, among other things. But he had a great insight into this. He had the first insight that that this equation can explain the formation of shapes, morphogenesis. So he had really this idea. And I owe this observation to Mayan Mimuha, that it's very interesting to see that it arises in so many different contexts. I think it's a very important point that Mayan observed. Anyway, so I've written here a few milestones of mathematical papers. I will explain them along the way. Okay. Good. So, let me continue and this is introduction. It's really taking me more time than what I wanted, but just to say that there are four main types of nonlinear terms, and this is important to keep in mind. There are four main types of nonlinear terms. Three archetypes of nonlinear terms, and I will always refer to those four terms. I'll try to remind them to you. One is this combustion nonlinearity. So f of t here is a product of g of t times 1 minus t, my previous notations. So this is, in the combustion case, it represents the reaction rate, the kinetics, kinetic reaction rate. And it's with a threshold temperature theta, it's positive between theta and 1. And then you have other terms, which come, for instance, in those genetic models which I had written before. One is, so the KPP type. So KPP type is, the model of it is U times 1 minus U. And it's when F of S is below, basically more generally, is when F of S is below its tangent at the origin. And this is a subcase of the more general case when you assume just that F is positive. F is positive, and this is a case when F is positive, in fact, very non-concave, was a case which corresponds to the nonlinearity introduced by Zeldovich, Frank, Kamenetsky, ZFK nonlinearity. Then another important case, which happens in biology, but also in combustion, is a case of the bistable nonlinear term. So, for the cubic was one instance like that. So, this is important to keep in mind. It's always like that. One always does less and one intends to do, but let me tell you the plan of what I'm going to. So I'm not going to to discuss all these aspects. I'm going to take some of these aspects, and so I told you a little bit what are fronts in excitable media and where it originates from, and some experiments and some also the history of this, a little bit a word of history about these models. The next topic I want to discuss is planar fronts. So this is a simple case, and when you have to deal with ordinary differential equations, but it's a good case to have in mind because this tells you what to expect in these models. So I'm going to describe you the results and maybe give you an idea of the proof, but very briefly. And then I will give you my next lecture many results which concern the dynamical issues for Plana France. So when you have Plana France, what can you say about the dynamics in the nonlinear heat equation related to them? The next theme will be curved traveling fronts. So when you have partial differential equations, but still traveling fronts, and likewise, I will tell you a little bit about the dynamical issues there. I don't know if I'll have time to discuss pre-boundary aspects of this problem, but the next thing on which I want to spend time are pulsating traveling fronts, and this is generalization of the notion of traveling front. So all the cases I've discussed up to here are cases when you do have traveling fronts, but for instance, as soon as you move to the heterogeneous case, usually you don't have any more traveling front, and there's a big effort now to try to understand how propagation occurs in non-homogeneous media, and I'm going to discuss the case when you have a periodic environment, and I will tell you a little bit about the generalization of traveling front, and which is the notion of pulsating traveling front. If I have some time, I will go into some details of proofs for this. I may mention some results which concern the speed of propagation, how you can estimate it, but I'm not sure. Maybe François Hamel will discuss it in his lecture, some aspects related to that. But I would like to tell you about some issues and open problems. I've mentioned open problems all along, but I would like to discuss here fronts with rapid advection. What is the effect of having rapid advection on the front, how it affects the propagation speed, and if I have time, I will discuss some of the models in ecology in particular that I was telling you before. So I think I will stop here today.
Any questions?
This is what indeed when you write down the equation you have not the same, you mean the same in front of f of t, g of t times y.
Yeah.
When you write down the equation you have q times g of t times y, where q is some heat parameter, release parameter, and the other. But there is a way you can somehow eliminate this and do some reduction of variables. However, maybe I should, I wanted to, this brings to mind, but you're right, indeed, and this is what, when you can do that because you have a simplify, you have one, only one, one product. I don't have it here, maybe I'll show it to you. Oh, here, maybe I have something here. So this is related to your question, really. In fact, if you want to understand complex chemistry and you have many reactants, then you cannot do that anymore. And indeed, you're absolutely right. Then you have to do it differently. Let me just, so this is going to be an answer to your question exactly. So let me just tell you what is the model for you to have an idea of what it means when you move from simple chemistry to realistic, what people consider realistic chemistry. Basically, what people consider realistic chemistry is a huge amount of reactions and species involved, really huge. Even say the reactions like H2 plus a half of O2 gives H2O, which you think are simple equations, a chemist will say that realistically it should have 150 intermediate species. So those things are very, very complicated. But anyways, so complex chemistry is, so you have now many species, B1, B2, Bn, and they form a network of reactions indexed by capital R, from little r, from 1 to capital R. And you have all these reactions, they combine and recombine those species in this way. So this is a summary of reaction. And basically, if you take the difference between those two stoichiometric coefficients multiplied by some molecular weight, here mi, of the species bi, then each reaction has its own kinetical rate. And each reaction, so if you now write the law of mass action, so you have a common temperature factor, Arrhenius factor, fr of t, but you have all these factors which come in the law of mass actions. That's the law of mass action as you may remember it. And if you do that, then after simplification, then you have a system for T, involving T the temperature, and the mass fraction of all the species. So you have N plus one unknowns. And so what you write here is the equation for temperature and the reaction, the equation of for species I, the evolution of species I. If you I'm writing it now in the form of traveling fronts, but of course you have the version of the evolution equation. So then you have to take into account all reactions. All reactions produce heat with a factor QR, and each reaction also absorbs or produces the species I, and you have to make the balance of all of them. So when you do that, you have this system, and indeed, then, of course, you're right, you cannot just eliminate and reduce it to the same F of TY, right? But this was a particular for one, when you have one product, you can do that. You can do that. But this is more general. And I should say, there are a bunch of examples here, but I should say that there are many results for this. I'm not going to discuss that. This is a very important system. One-dimensional system, and but there are many, many open problems to be understood. Right. So this is a simplification, and it's not very justified. So you can either you can take different diffusivities, but this then it's not very coherent with the rest. The only way to be coherent with this model is to take the same Lewis number. It's a good observation. To take the same Lewis number, you're coherent. If you don't take the same Lewis number, then you really have to resort to a very different model. You go in another framework. But so this is it. And there are many issues here to understand how, you know, under what condition you want to have, you have this network of reactions. You want to understand how the network influences the existence of flames. How? What is the speed? What is the outcome of it? And a very important practical question is also how you can reduce the number of equations to a few equations just to try to retain some specific to calculate, let's say, the speed in a simpler way. And so there are many issues. For instance, there is a result of Alexis Bonnet, which is that if you take the graph of reactions, you have a graph associated with it, and it has no cycles in it. If you take a graph with no cycles, then you always have a front. So that's one example. It's really interesting to see that the properties of the graph will influence. But I'm not going to discuss this. I just wanted to show it to you so that you have an idea of what are the more complicated models lurking behind the simpler equations which I'm taking here.
How can you get rid of the assumption that Q is known
already? Oh, you're right. This is, this, as I said, you know, I said it's really serious simplification. It's a very serious simplification, and I think that's one of the next steps in some of the things I'm going to tell you. But it's not clear that it's very close by, is to try to understand how you can determine Q simultaneously to produce some of the effects I want to explain. So let me just say one word about that. The full system for combustion is a very complicated system, because not only do you have this with a Q term, but also in partial differential equations versions for that with a Q dot grad term, but also then you have fluid mechanics equations for Q, and then you run, you know, as a very particular subcase, you have in particular the little difficulty of Navier-Stokes equation, the side problem you have to deal with, and of course, so you are really far from anything. So one of the aspects you really want to do, and I hope I can come to that here, is to say, let's try to understand how, if I take a Q of which I know the form, the shape, flow which has this and that properties, which is very rapid or not very rapid, for instance, or which has many swirls or not many swirls, how does it affect the propagation of a front through this given flow? this is an important issue, and it's really important in even in applications, because but indeed you need, you know, if you want really to do to the full system, you would have to take it as part of the unknowns.
It's not a purely English problem.
No. This is really more. There's no way you can really. But it's known in some cases. It's known that you. There are cases in which you know more or less the shape of the flow, and which is produced in part by the thing itself. But for instance, you know, in a forest fire, basically you know that there's a very effect of wind is very strong, and you can somehow model it. And of course, it's true that the temperature itself modifies the flow, but it's not so important. The underlying flow is really the most important thing. So there are cases when you can try to see how, in a given flow, things propagate. But for Maurizio Falcone is right, and the complete system would involve also determining Q.
Do you think people,
the
definition of a meaning?
Yes.
What
the definition? Well, basically, yes, you're right. I was not... Oh, okay. The mathematical definition is really the fact that you have a nonlinear term of a few. This is what I refer to. It's the fact that you have an f of u term, that you have a nonlinear term f of u, that the properties of the medium in some sense are affected by the level at which this has...
This has
I'm sorry? Right. Well, it could be, you know, the fact that it's excitable. It could be excitable in some way in a given part of space and differently elsewhere. The fourth order term derivatives, you mean?
Force.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah.
But if it is fourth term, you call the excitable meaning that the very general. Situation.
No, but it's a force term. You call it the forcing term f of u, right? I'm just saying that, you know, but you know, you're right. It's a very vague term. I did never claim to have a definition, a mathematical definition of what is an excitable medium. I'm just saying that why do I use this term then? The question is, why do I use this term? But before, let me just tell you that for me, it's really the fact that you have f of u, the system reacts in a nonlinear way to the level at which there is. You can have forcing terms which would not be excitable. If you have f of x, then this is not excitable. I don't call it excitable. It's a forcing term. It's not excitable. In this case here, in some sense, there is, for instance, the flame equation which I described. This is, for me, the best example to see what I call an excitable medium, because in some sense you don't have a forcing term. You just have an initial input of energy, and the medium itself, the gas itself, has the property that it can be excited by itself in some sense. So with this initial input of energy, then it will start exciting the neighboring slices as I described before, and in turn will react. So this is what I call, that's why I use the word excitable. Why do I like the word excitable, then, to this question? It's because I feel that there are all these phenomena, part of the phenomena, which come from very different fields. They come from combustion, but they come also from biology, as I said, and from other models, from ecology. All these models share some common features. In particular, many of them can lead you to the same type of equations. So the overall class of this phenomena I like to call excitable media. That's why I use this word.
I have to interrupt you. We're going to have already Christmas here, so you're going to have some questions. You want to have a 5 minutes break?
I think during the preparation for the computer, only if we take 5 minutes break, and I'm waiting here for the next 2 days.